Hi, everyone. Welcome to the INSS English Podcast. I'm Sarah Foyer. I'm a fellow here at the INSS, and I'm joined by three of our distinguished fellows who are going to be with us today to talk about the situation in Israel of the last week or so. I have to my right a retired Colonel Advocate Pnina Sharvit Baruch. She's the Director of the Program on Law and National Security here at the Institute. On Zoom with us is Dr. Kobi Michael, a senior fellow and expert on Palestinian affairs, and Dr. Meir Elran, who directs various programs here at the Institute dealing with internal domestic Israeli affairs. So, Kobi, I want to start with you. We're now about 9 days into this, I think it's fair to call it a war at this point.
We call it round.
Between Israel and Hamas. So can you give us a little bit of the background on the Palestinian side? How can we explain why this erupted when it did, and say a few words about where we are today on the Palestinian side of things?
Thank you, Sarah. I think that in order to understand what actually has happened here, we have to go back something like 3 months to the Palestinian arena and to the issue of the elections. The declaration about the elections and then the decision of Abu Mazen to postpone the elections. We have to understand that for Hamas, that perceives itself as an alternative to Fatah, that wants to success Fatah in the PA and later on in the PLO, The election was the ultimate platform in order to gain this control as legitimate control, which means by elections. Now, when Abu Mazen understood that he's going to lose the elections due to internal reasons who are related to the split, the friction in Hamas, in Fatah movement, and the weakness of the Palestinian Authority and its legitimacy, he decided to postpone the elections, and Hamas felt that the elections actually were stolen from them. Therefore, they decided to score the points and to position themselves politically by using East Jerusalem, which is a very sensitive arena, in a very unique period of time, which is the Ramadan, which is the holiest the holiday for the Muslims and for the Palestinians. And preparing in advance, they prepared their constituency and other constituencies, Palestinian constituencies in East Jerusalem in order to escalate the situation. And because they felt that this is an opportunity to embarrass Abu Mazen and the Palestinian Authority about their incompetence with regard to East Jerusalem, because they thought that under the current political situation in Israel, Israel will be constrained in its response, they decided also to broaden or to change the equation or the rules of the game between Israel and Hamas, and to add to the Gazan equation East Jerusalem, to position themselves as the defenders or the protectors of East Jerusalem in the eyes not only of the Palestinian constituency, but also in the eyes of the regional constituencies here in the region. And they set an ultimatum to Israel and demanded to from Israel to withdraw its forces and police forces from Sheikh Jarrah neighborhood and from the old city and from Haram Sharif and so on and so forth. And they threatened Israel that if Israel will not do that, then they will they react. And actually, they realized their ultimatum by launching seven rockets toward Jerusalem. I think that they were prepared that Israel will retaliate, but they were not prepared that the Israeli retaliation will be so aggressive and so massive. Therefore, when Israel retaliated aggressively, They retaliated back by launching rockets towards Tel Aviv and towards other big cities in Israel. And we found ourselves in this round, which is actually much more than a round in comparison to the previous ones that we used to know during the last decade or so. And I think that in the Israeli eyes, this is a declaration of war. This is casus belli, okay, what Hamas did. And this was an opportunity for Israel to rechange the rules of the game. I think that the massive attacks and the massive damages that were caused to Hamas reduced dramatically the achievements that Hamas has achieved at the first days of this round of this war. And if Hamas succeeded in the beginning to connect between East Jerusalem and Gaza and to bring the Arab citizens of Israel to the equation and to create a sort of identification or solidarity with the Arabs along the borders with Israel, and so on and so forth. Eventually, after 9 days, I think that they are in a different position. I think that there is a very significant erosion of their achievements. And I think that we are in the last phase of this operation. We have to take into consideration that even if Israel will cease the fire, unilaterally even, we have to expect that Hamas will launch the last rocket. But I think that Hamas and Gaza Strip in the day after of this campaign will be totally different than Hamas and the Gaza Strip that we used to know before. And the big question from the strategic point of view is what Israel is going to do with that. But I think that we'll discuss it later.
Yeah, on. We'll come back to that. And there were a lot of points in what you just said that I do want us to come back to. You know, Pnina, I'm struck by Kobi's description of the reasons why this latest escalation, why we've seen this eruption, having to do, at least in no small part, to intra-Palestinian disputes, essentially. Now, if you look at the international arena, a lot of this is not really being reflected in descriptions or explanations, analyses of the war. And this brings us to this whole question of Israel's, essentially the second war that sometimes Israel finds itself fighting, which has to do with its own international legitimacy, the image. How do you assess that front in this particular round of escalation?
So yes, so we have the military campaign, and we always have also the international campaign, and eventually that's a very important component of what will be the achievements or mm-hmm. what will be the results of any military campaign. So it's the whole issue of legitimacy is really based on two main factors, I think, that affect the legitimacy issue and how Israel is viewed in the international media and also in the diplomatic arena. The first is, I would say, who started, who's to blame, and I think here in this case, Israel's had a good, from the legitimacy point of view, had a good starting point, because I think it was quite clear that Hamas started.
Yeah.
I mean, there were certain clashes, but they were in Jerusalem. They were limited. Also, it was really a riot. The police reacted. There was no even Palestinian fatality, and there was nothing that happened in Gaza Strip. Israel didn't strike at any kind of a target there. And then the Hamas suddenly decided to start firing rockets, and it also started already firing rockets to Jerusalem and then to all parts of Israel, including the central parts of Israel. So I think in the beginning, Israel enjoyed legitimacy because it was really conceived that this time the Hamas started the fight. I think it is also easier to frame this conflict not as an opposition against the occupation or against the humanitarian situation in Gaza, but really to show it as it is, of the Hamas not accepting the right of Israel to exist at all and trying to pull in the whole Israeli situation and the Arab population in Israel into the conflict. So we started from a good point, but then the second main factor is what is happening in the Gaza Strip and the issue of the victims.
Yeah.
And the more civilian victims you have and the more destruction you have, that becomes the focus of the attention, that becomes the focus of the media coverage. And when you see children running between the rubble, between the bodies of their parents, and these are the pictures that are shown, or bodies of children, And you have the pictures of the children in Israel running to the shelter. So while it breaks our hearts, maybe to see the children running to the shelter, but it's of course breaks the heart more and mainly of the public, of the international public, to see the, these pictures. And then immediately it starts the whole narrative of Israel is so strong, the Hamas is so weak. Here, Hamas fires rockets. Yes, maybe it fired thousands of rockets, but they don't really cause any damage. And Israel is causing huge damage. This is not a fair fight.
Right.
The Palestinians are the weaker side.
And
then we start losing, exactly, the David and Goliath. We start losing the public support. And then this loss of public support starts putting pressure on the governments also. And in the US, we also have now an administration that put in its front of its principles, human rights and dignity and abiding by the law. So it's very easy to put a lot of, there's a lot of pressure there from, let's say, the Democratic Party or parts of it. So this starts putting the ticking clock of the continued legitimacy of the operation. And this puts, the clock starts ticking about how much time we still can continue with this operation before the world will stop us and or before whatever we do will cost more than the benefit we get out of it.
So, Meir, both Pnina and Kobi have referred in passing to the issue of Arabs in Israel and the some of the clashes that we've seen. I think in contrast to almost every other previous round of escalations, certainly between Israel and Hamas, but even 2006, the Lebanon War, I don't recall there being this eruption of internal strife. So I want to ask you if you can speak a little bit to, you know, for people watching this from the outside, from outside Israel, what are these protests? What is some of the rioting? What is the violence really about underneath this? And maybe if you can speak a bit to a few of the proximate causes, the triggers here that unleashed this.
So thank you very much for us, Sarah, for your question. Before answering your question, I would just to add, so as to frame the issue here.
Yeah.
For the first time in a long while, Israel is facing, you know, sort of two-front situation, which is quite awkward for us. Number one, we are fighting a war that is very important by itself between us and Hamas. It's not a very simple situation. I think we manage successfully, but still it's a major challenge.
Yeah.
It's a military challenge, it's a political challenge, it's an international challenge, as Pnina said. So it's a major issue. The problem is that simultaneously we have clashes in the streets and in our streets between the, you know, people, Arab people and Jewish people, who are causing us at least a major concern about the issues, the domestic issues, which relate to the very important questions pertaining to the fabric, the social fabric of the Israeli society. So this is a Jewish and democratic state, but we have a majority-minority kind of a situation. Remember, we have 20% of the population in Israel are Muslim Arabs, and they are associated in terms of their ethnicity and their sort of political affiliation to a large extent with the Palestinian people, who are still our adversaries, if not to say enemies, and we are fighting them in the meantime. So it's a major issue. And for a long time, since the inception of the State of Israel, the relations between the two sides, the Jews and the Arabs in Israel, the relations were not very comfortable. But interesting it is to note that in the last 10 years, and especially in the last 5 years, the relations are clearly in an improvement or a progressive kind of a process. They are doing much more better socially, economically, and also politically, I could say. They are necessarily doing much better than the other Palestinians, either in the West Bank or in the Gaza Strip. and they aspire for more, justifiably so, of course. On the other hand, the Jewish majority is not very keen on, you know, the Arabs, especially the Arab political aspirations with regard to the Palestinian big issues.
Yeah.
So we have to remember that the background is complex, quite complex. To that, I want to add a more immediate, the more immediate issue, which is again based on the basic issues. We have to remember that most of the Muslims, Arabs in Israel, are, let's say, conservative, traditional Muslims. For them, symbols of religiosity, of Islam, of the holy places, of East Jerusalem, of the Mosque of Aqsa, are very, very important. And they are addressing those issues in a very serious manner. For them, it's very important. So when these things that we have heard about before, you know, started to accumulate,
yeah,
and happen in Jerusalem, I mean, they couldn't really, and they did not really stay idle, especially in some specific issues like, you know, the shock grenades in the Al-Aqsa and, yeah, different kinds of things that, let's put it mildly, the police handled the situation in an aggressive manner that was very, very uncomfortable for many of the Arabs. So it started spread out and broaden to the streets with, and this is another element that we see here, which is very interesting also socially. We're talking about marginal groups, very small groups of hooligans, vigilantes, if you wish, on both sides, who found the opportunity appropriate for them to express themselves in the streets. And the most serious issue, as a matter of fact, presently, or the most immediate issue, is the clashes between those vigilantes in the streets. To that, I would like to add the political issue, generally in Israel and within the Arab minority. Generally speaking, you know, we have a problem now for the last 2.5 years. We don't have a steady government. Yeah. Stability is very, very weak, let's say. And also governance in Israel is not great. And this is a general picture in Israel, but also in the Arab population, there are very interesting and quite concerning issues, political issues, a major split between different groups, antagonism, hatred. So they don't, I mean, can speak about Jews against Arabs. We have to realize all the time we're talking about very heterogeneous kind of a situation in which, unfortunately, radical elements, extreme elements, disenchanted elements, both in the Arab sector and in the Jewish sector, are, let's say, expressing themselves violently in the streets, which is very, very serious. It's very serious because this is, I mean, violence should remain in the domain of the government and its agencies. And when the government is not really capable to restore law and order and to tranquilize the situation, it encourages all those vigilantes to come up and to cause trouble, not only to the other side, but also to their own communities. And that's what's happening in some of the cases. So the big question really is now, to what extent the last few days, by the way, it is becoming significantly better. It's calming down in the last 2 or 3 years. The police,
two or three days. Yeah.
Thank you very much for that. The police is more present, more effective. And also the some things happening, in the civilian arena to encourage quiet. I hope that it is sustainable, that it goes on.
Right.
If not, we are in trouble. If the situation will, of course, improve, which we all hope will happen, then we might look at it in a different way.
Yeah. Nina, did you want to add? Yeah.
Being also a lawyer or a legal advisor, I think what we see here is also the result of the lack of rule of law internally, and first of all, especially in the Arab community, we've been having, this is a process of already many years, yeah, of a crime, of criminal gangs that are terrorizing the Arab population,
right,
with guns almost in every house in some of the places, a lot of internal violence, violence against women, violence against, you know, protection, and not much or very little was being done. It was conceived as a problem of the Arab population, and recently more attempts were made to meet this situation, but really not enough. And now we see what happens when you have all these people, young people mainly, that are out of control, that are criminal in their behavior, are now turning this violence against Jews
outwards. Right.
And I think this shows how important it is to address this lack of law. And we see the same, although in a very different magnitude, in the Arab street, we see this widespread violence almost everywhere. On the Jewish side, it's of course much more limited to a smaller fraction, but there also what you see is these groups of these very violent extremist Jews that are also, there's no rule of law. Some of them come from what we call, I don't know, the in Hebrew it's called the guys of the hills in the, yeah, in the West Bank, and yeah, the youth and La Familia and other organizations that have been acting violently without any control by the state. So now they are erupting, and I think this shows how one of the lessons learned, I think, and we can already say it now, is that that much more must be done to control the situation, and the rule of law has to apply everywhere equally.
Right.
Otherwise, we see these things.
Yeah. So I want to try to bring together the comments of all three of you, and Kobi, I'd be curious for your thoughts on this. You know, Hamas does seem to have tried to use the issue of Jerusalem to really appeal to the broader Arab community, both within Israel, and I think Meir alluded to this, that there is of course a deep understandable discomfort when things in Jerusalem happen. And so Hamas seems to have tried to use that to try and spread its own legitimacy beyond just this little enclave in Gaza. And I would even argue more regionally to try and get legitimacy on the regional stage that I think it was lacking. So I want to ask, sort of pull all of this together, all three of you, whether you think, first of all, is Hamas succeeding in that, in presenting itself as the representative or the defender of Palestinians, Muslims, whatever. And where do all three of you see this going? Where are we headed now? Kobi, maybe you want to start.
I think that, as I said before, I think that their achievements in the first days or during the first days of this round, of this campaign, were much more essential, much more significant than today. I think that in each day of this campaign, we can see a process of erosion of these achievements. I think that at the end of the day, we have to differentiate between the declarative ideological level and between the behavioral level, which means that the populace of the West Bank, as well as some groups among Arab Israelis, do identify themselves with Hamas. They do appreciate Hamas. They do think that Muhammad Deif is the new Palestinian hero. Okay, but it doesn't mean that they have the energy or the will to translate it to active action. We saw what has happened in the West Bank. We had 3 days ago some riots, some demonstrations, 10 Palestinians that were killed. And since the day after, we see that the West Bank, generally speaking, is much calmer. We have to wait and see what is going to be today. But I think that Hamas has not succeeded in recruiting the mass, okay, of the Palestinian populace in the West Bank and inside Israel, and they haven't succeeded in doing that with regard to the Arab countries around Israel as well. In addition to that, I think that if it will come to elections in the Palestinian arena, I have no doubt that Hamas will win these elections, because Fatah and the Palestinian Authority are in the worst position since ever, mainly after this round. But I think that in order to sum up, we can say that their achievement are, I would say, much lower than they thought they should have been at the end of the day.
Okay. Meir, maybe speak a little bit to the internal dimension of this. I mean, we saw some interesting reactions on the part of certain Arab leaders within Israel also on this question.
Okay. I think that I am sorry to say that, or I'm happy to say, that Israel knows how to manage external threats. It takes us sometimes some time or some practices, and we have some, you know, residual elements here. I mean, it's not everything is so great, but we know how to manage it. We have a very, very robust military machinery. Yeah. And once we activate it, it knows what to do and how to do it. And luckily, well, swiftly, and with a relatively low a level of collateral damage. Unfortunately, we do not have such a mechanism to deal with a much more complex issue of the domestic arena. Mm. And we have to understand that we have a major challenge here. And we, if we want, and I think, and I would pledge for us to look at it very, very seriously, if we want to mend the fences and to establish normal relations between the majority, the Jewish majority and the Arab minority in this country, we have, first of all, of course, immediately to bring about, you know, tranquility, stability, and, you know, back to normal kind of a situation.
Cessation of the violence, anyway. That's the
number
first,
one, no doubt about that, which is, as I said before, apparently is happening, knock on wood. But then we had to reconstruct the entire structure here. And this is very, very challenging, especially in a situation that we are in this country, socially, politically, etc. But this is an imperative for us. We need to do that, because if we do not, we will have major problems facing us, not only sort of in the general kind of a manner, but also very, very important to this personal security and safety of the individuals in this country. Because law and order is needed to keep up or to preserve the safety of the people in this country, be them, you know, Jews, Arabs, doesn't make any difference.
Right.
And this really calls for a very, very serious thinking. We are doing that presently. As a matter of fact, we have been doing that for quite a long time now, but we were met now with the challenge to bring our insights, our understanding of the complexity of the situation to the forefront in a way that the government, the central government, the local government, the civil organizations will understand, internalize, and then practice some new paths towards this kind of a reconstruction. This is very, very important. I'm sure that we can do that, by the way. I'm sure that we can do that. If we gather all our resources, our domestic resources, okay, which we have, more solidarity, more trust, and more dialogue, positive dialogue, and then to marginalize the radicalism on the two sides, okay, right, of those who are interrupting these kinds of prospects.
Right. Pnina, where do you see this going now?
So first of all, we see that the situation is coming down, but it's very volatile. If we have any situation, either in the West Bank, suddenly many a terror attack that succeeds on the one hand, or many Palestinian casualties in some clashes, or if we see in the Gaza Strip, again, either a rocket that is fired that suddenly kills many Israelis or hits a strategic site, or many civilian casualties in an attack there, and everything can again re-burst again, so up in flames. So it's very, the situation is very volatile. But I think what we learn here, and I think the most important thing that has to come out of it, we cannot allow Hamas to become the representatives of the Palestinians at large, the ones in, not the ones in the West Bank, not the ones in East Jerusalem, and certainly not the ones living in Israel. So right. I think that's something that is a must. That any such connection will weaken not only Israel vis-a-vis the Hamas, it will weaken the whole idea of reaching a peaceful settlement someday, and the Palestinian moderates vis-a-vis the extremists that don't accept the right of Israel to exist. And I think what we learn from what we see here is that the Palestinian issue, that so many years, I think there was an attempt to push it under the carpet, to say, okay, it doesn't really interest anyone. We can continue to live with it. It's alive, it's kicking, and we have to deal with it. And I think one thing that we see here is that the national feelings of the Palestinians, also of the Israeli Arabs, that many of them call themselves Israeli Palestinians, is there. And we have to address it somehow. And I just finished a paper that was going to be published any day about the different options of the one state solution, coming to the conclusion that this really is not a good idea. And I think I am going to go back and even write my conclusions in a more definite way, because I think what we see here is this won't work. You cannot control people forever without addressing their national feelings, their religious sensitivities. So only through a separation, through a way that they can fulfill the national feeling somewhere, like in a Palestinian state, for example, then I think we will be able to reach a real coexistence with the Palestinians. And for that, we have to not repeat again this practice, this policy of strengthening the Hamas and weakening the moderate Palestinians, but we have to strengthen the moderate Palestinians and weaken the Hamas.
Yeah. Well, I think we'll have to leave it there. I would just add that I think these last 10 days, if anybody needed a reminder of how fragile really this experiment is of Israel. And on the other hand, I think we are starting to see that there are some strong foundations. And as Meir said, I think it's going to depend on where we take things from now. So thank you all for joining us. You can see the rest of our podcasts on the INSS website, and we'll see you again soon.